Welcome to another episode of Behind the Smiles, a podcast where we interview and chat with some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation. With your host, Dr. Gina Dorfman. Behind the Smiles is brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smiles. I am here today with Paul Edwards from Cedar HR Solutions. Paul, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Dr. Gina.
I am really excited to talk to you, even though the subject, I don't know, it's more scary than exciting, I think.
No, it's exciting. It's exciting.
Okay. So, you know, I think when you interview multiple dentists, they will all tell you that HR is, managing employees, keeping employees accountable, making sure that we're not making any serious HR mistakes that can bite us in the butt, essentially, one day. It's probably the most challenging part of the practice for many of us. So I think that you can deliver a ton of value today. And I have so many questions for you. I'd like to start by asking you just to share a little bit of your journey into dentistry, how you ended up doing what you do.
Well, Gina, in another life, I'm 57 now. So I started owning businesses when I was in my late 20s and started off with a window cleaning business, of all things. We won't go too far down that track, but it actually turned out to be a really successful business. And I started learning my first HR lessons there, which is, you know, we were cleaning windows and I had to start hiring people to clean windows. And it didn't dawn on me that I should actually kind of figure out if they were really jazzed about cleaning windows. And so I tried all sorts of things to make them clean windows. And you can't make someone do something better than, you know, what they actually are capable or want to do. Out of that, I eventually opened up another business, which I ended up with about 60 employees. And so I feel your pain out there. I know what it's like to manage people and to need managers to manage people, and you got to manage the managers and on and on and on. And I also remember what it was like to just have two or three employees. It's more challenging as you grow, but a lot of the same compliance issues are there for you, no matter what size you are. And so eventually I sold that second business after 15 years and all those employees. You can guess one of the things where I took a big sigh was, I don't have to make payroll next week. When I sold those businesses, I was like, no more payroll for me. So, flash forward a few years, an opportunity came up for me. I was working as an analyst for a law firm, which did a lot of work for doctors. And that law firm was really good friends with a big coach out there that coaches in dentistry. One thing led to another, and I ended up founding this HR company because I knew the challenges that everybody was going through. And so I ended up co-founding the HR company with one of the owners of the law firm. And we do, we started off doing associate agreements and we quickly moved into HR support and then doing employee handbooks. And then, the real challenge was all 50 states, have rules. So we had to learn, all 50 states. And then over the last, we've been here for 13, 14 years, all the different municipalities started passing all kinds of HR related laws. And so what was already kind of complicated is becoming even more complicated and more difficult for you guys to, intuitively just know and be able to look up and figure it out. In fact, I think it's gotten beyond your capability. It's not that you couldn't do it, Dr. Jean, it's that's not what you're up to. You guys are up to something else, not being HR experts.
That's so true. Before we started, we chatted for a little bit, and you told me the story about how you named your company, and I thought it was really cool. And part of the reason is my company is called Yappy, and it was actually an acronym. Right. When we named it first, we didn't know what to call it, so we called it something we do in software, yet another practice interface. And it just stuck. And it just stuck. So so you kind of have the same story. Let's hear your story.
Okay. So when we first created it, and again, remember, I alluded to the fact that we were working with that coach out there. And we're sitting in his courses, and he is sort of recommending that dentists step their game up. If they're going to have associates and they want to grow a little bit, they need to call themselves something like the Center for Excellence in Dentistry. You know, set yourself apart from just the guy that puts his name on a sign. And so we heard that and we were like, that's a great idea. So we named ourselves the Center for Employment Dispute Resolution. And the problem with that was, Dr. Mops, Gina is that's her alias out there. That's where she, that's how I know you.
That's right.
The problem with that is that if I leave a message, like a sales message or return a call or reach out to you and say, you know, please tell the doctor that the Center for Employment Dispute Resolution called, you come to the phone with your voice shaking because you think we're a government agency and we're after you or something. And that was not, not the intended, you know, outcome that we were looking for. So we changed it to CEDAR, you know, without an A, we always have to say that. We changed it to CEDAR HR Solutions. And, you know, the tree is an all-enveloping thing. It's compliance, and it's support, and it's software, and it's associate agreement. So that's kind of how we look at it.
That's wonderful.
That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I love this story. So let's go back to something that you mentioned earlier. I certainly know that, you know, I have a fairly large practice. I have about 30 employees, including it's five associates now. Mm-hmm. So it's impossible to stay on top of all of the laws. And I almost wish, you know, someone, when they pass a law, send me a bulletin, like, let me know what's going on. That, yeah. You know, the law gets, and certain laws, like when we had the sick leave mandate, I mean, that mm-hmm. was, you know, passed around pretty well. But a lot of times we don't really know the laws, and we don't, you know, they don't teach them in dental school. We don't, and even if they did, I mean, laws change all the time. So yep. How do we stay on top of it? What do we do?
So every day we send out, almost every day, we send out a bulletin to somebody in some state or some city somewhere who's a client of ours, who's, we call them members, alerting them that something has changed. And in our model, if they're a member, the something that has changed, if it requires a poster, we're providing that information. And a lot of times it does, Doctor. You know that. You have to put a poster up. If it requires a change to their handbook, we are telling them that and making that arrangement. We're giving them some background. And then finally, sometimes the change doesn't require a change in your policies, but requires an understanding, a different understanding. For example, it is not that long ago that we, you know, the EEOC basically said you have to stop asking about criminal history in applications. You can ask, and there's a point at which you can ask for it, and you can make that a you know, an issue, something that you need to look into. But that's a, you know, that's a quick example of something where we don't need to change anything in your policy. So the answer to your question is we do that. We have a judicial watch team here. That's their job. So we were even watching to the best of our ability when city councils are working on some law, because not everything's going to get passed. A lot of laws get written and get to the governor's desk or get to the mayor's desk, and they get wiped out. Unfortunately, it happens all too often. I mean, we have to be set to go. So, you know, sometimes these laws are like, and it goes into effect 60 days from now. So we're just sitting there waiting to see if the mayor or the governor is going to sign it. And as soon as they do, then we have to jump into action. And then on the other side of that, it's our job to know all those other rules, because they vary, you know, they vary state to state, city to city. Whether you have a certain number of employees matters, it creates a threshold. So some laws will apply to you and some laws won't. You know, there's a lot of variables there, and it, that's our job. I mean, we're jazzed by that job. Like, you guys are jazzed about what you do, and, you know, you truly, you know, you make a difference in people's lives. I mean, you see people get out of your chair and they're no longer in pain. You see people get out of your chair and they've got a better smile. You see kids get out of the chair and, you know they're going to go to school and not going to be picked on anymore. You make a difference in people's lives. And we do that. Unfortunately, we do it in HR. It's not as exciting as a smile. It's a great smile, but, you know, that's kind of our goal. That's what gets us up in the morning.
But I have to tell you, I mean, this is serious stuff. I mean, they can really make or break someone. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, I know that A lot of practices don't even have employment liability insurance. Yep. It's not part of the usual insurance package that they buy, and it does get pretty expensive. Is this something that practices should look into having? Is it worth it?
EPLI is something. I always say, if you can afford it, buy the insurance. It doesn't generally hurt you to have it, and EPLI is no exception to that rule. It is a commodity. The price can go up and down. Sometimes it's nonsensical why it's so expensive at any given time, but it's insurance. And I think we all think insurance and nonsensical go together. I kind of think the secret here, though, the kind of backdoor secret that everybody can learn here, is that EPLI does not cover most things that you would get sued for. So it covers the catastrophic occurrences, but it won't cover wage and hour violations, which is a big place where you guys get yourself into trouble because you're following some best practice that's not legal. It won't cover you if you are found to have been intentional in what you did. And this can be particularly difficult for doctors who are charged with sexual harassment or something like that. So EPLI is good to have. It does not replace, it's not a safety net. It's not an umbrella by any means.
Good to know. I didn't realize there were such limitations.
Quite a few.
So let's talk about some safe practices, because I have to tell you, I spend a lot of time online in Facebook groups and on Dental Town and other mm-hmm. forums. And there's just so much misinformation there. And I see a dentist post a question about some kind of employment-related issue, gets a lot of advice, and half of it is incorrect.
Right.
So how do we, first of all, how do we keep ourselves safe and stay, legal?
Well, there are some models out there, and I mean, that's kind of one of them. And look, community is important because human resources, on one side is compliance. And sometimes someone will come on and they'll post something like, well, what do you guys do about paying your employees when you go to a seminar and you take them to a nice place? And my answer to that is that's not a question for anybody's opinion. There's an answer to that question that's governed by federal and state law. And that's exactly what you do. You don't have any choices. I can't change it. You can't change that. So in those instances, you want to make sure that you're, I want to say that your HR support, wherever you're getting it from, understands those things. Because you can go on Google and look, one of the biggest upsets we get is an employee of a practice with, say, 20 other employees, or maybe 5 or maybe 30, will research online their rights underneath pregnancy, because they're pregnant, and find the Family Medical Leave Act. They'll come into the practice. They'll be upset because the practice's policy says they can only have 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And they've read they're entitled to 12 and all of these other things they've read online. Well, what they've found is research which encompasses the Family Medical Leave Act, which only applies to employers with 50 or more employees, with even more conditions set on top of that. And so the ability to get bad information has never been greater. I mean, Google is a terrible place. We do not Google here. We run down the rabbit hole to the statute, and then we figure out what's going on and we give our guidance around that. So the way you stay out of trouble is you don't use templated handbooks. In all honesty, you don't write your own handbook. We used to catch a lot of flack for this, and we still do occasionally. We don't give you your handbook in Microsoft Word. And the reason why, metaphorically, is when I go to get my teeth cleaned, the hygienist doesn't hand me a bunch of instruments at the end, and neither does the doctor, and say, you know what, everything you need is right here. Go ahead and take care of that problem in your mouth, because I don't have the specialized knowledge. I don't have that understanding, so I go to them for that. So, I think you want to take all guidance with a skepticism. You want to know that the place that you're getting the guidance from is committed to human resources. And so Dr. Gina, I want to make this point. It's a wide generalization. We are committed to HR like payroll companies are committed to payroll. we have added payroll to our services, but we are not payroll experts. We use experts to administer the payroll. Our focus is on HR. I point that out because there's a lot of payroll companies that now represent themselves as HR experts, and they don't really have any passion for it. They aren't great at it. It's not the thing that they do. And so just be careful of where you're getting your HR guidance from.
That's a great point. I wanted to go back to, you mentioned employee handbook.
Yes.
Does every practice need an employee handbook?
I think so, yeah, because the main reason is that there are, first of all, many states, there are actually requirements that you have to fulfill as an employer, and the best and easiest way to do it is inside the employee handbook. I mean, you all have a requirement to inform employees that they could be fired if they mishandle protected health information. So, you know, you're supposed to let them know that. And if you do that, it mitigates all sorts of things that can happen if you have a complaint that comes against you. It reduces the fines. It kind of shifts some burden over to you being able to say, well, I told them, I did train them, and I did inform them of the consequences. That kind of thing exists across most states. There's things that you're supposed to inform your employees of. The other side of the handbook is if the policies are all correct, and there should be not a single incorrect policy in your handbook, they provide protections to you that you can't get in any other way. So when your employees get up in the morning, all employment laws which protect them, all the statutes and regulations and the minimum wage and the EEOC and the, you know, all those things, they don't have to write a handbook and give it to you. Unfortunately for you, many of those protections that are there for you in those same areas have to be delivered via an employee handbook. I'll give you a really good example, easy one. If you have a problem with your paycheck, report it to Dr. Gina. You are required to let us know as soon as you know that there's an issue, and then you go on to state what you will do to correct that issue. That is a burden shifter. That means that it's going to be difficult for someone to pop up 6 months later after you fired them, filing a wage complaint that they didn't get paid something properly, and assert that they knew that there had been an issue for 6 months and that they didn't say anything about it. They have to answer that. And so let me apply that to sexual harassment. So if you've got multiple offices or multiple associates, you need to cover your rear end and you need to let the employees know. And that's powerful for the employees. That's for them as much as it is for you at the pinnacle, because, you know, Dr. Gina, who's the last to know? I mean, it, you know, you know, that stuff goes on. And so there are many, many other ways that I can kind of shift that burden and put that requirement of reporting inside of policies. And then there are many other protections that I can put in there. If you can show that you understand the rule and that you were trying to comply with it, that goes a long ways when someone comes in to take a look at you. And that someone is generally someone from the Department of Labor. But it can come cut across many different government agencies. And what we say is help them help you. So if they see, you know, the policy and you were trying to comply with it and you've got the documentation there because you know that you're supposed to have it, then you're helping them say, you know what, I don't see a whole lot here. I'm not going to go another layer down. And that happens all the time because investigators are overworked too. They have the same problem that we all have. They're all juggling. So when they walk in and you're a disaster and you've got no policies and you don't seem to understand that you can't pay everybody a fixed salary and you don't have time cards readily available and you know, and I could keep going down the list, you're not helping them help you at all.
Great point. Excellent point. You mentioned time cards. So I feel like there's still offices that are not using like an electronic timekeeping system. How important is that?
Let's use your state, for example. Okay, so in California, there's a mandatory meal and break rules.
Right.
And there are penalties. If an employee goes a day without getting one of their two breaks, if they work full shift, or they don't take 20 minutes of lunch and it can be unpaid, they are required to be paid an hour of premium pay. So if the way you counter that is that you have a timekeeping system, which actually tracks that they are or are not taking these breaks, informs you, and then you react to it. So that's the way the law changed about 6 or 7 years ago. If you know they're not taking the break and you keep issuing corrective actions to them saying, you know, this is our policy, you got to do a better job, take your breaks, then you don't owe them that premium pay. Unless it becomes systemic, by the way, Dr. Gina, you can't maintain a systemic issue around these break things. You have to fix it eventually. But if you're using, say, a wall clock or writing it down or any of the clocks built into your patient management softwares, they don't have these things in them. So that's one example. And then on the other side of it is that the way you defend yourself against a wage and hour claim is to be able to show all the time and how it was kept and that you're recording it accurately, that the employee's recording it. And there's lots of little safeguards in there and that electronic stuff. So if someone comes to you and says, I didn't clock in on time and you change their time, or I clocked in wrong and I didn't start for another 20 minutes and you go in and change their time, you just went in and changed their time. And the electronic record will show that you, doctor, logged in and changed that employee's time. So let's go a year from now and they've done that 27 times. All we have is a record of you changing time for that employee. Change that to a very well-built system, good piece of software, by which the employee must make the request through an online self-service portal saying, I'd like my time changed. They leave a note in there. You then approve that change, and now you have a full record of a closed loop. And there's something else you have a record of. If the employee makes a wage claim, you also have a record of that employee making 27 mistakes in their clocking. Would you like to have that sitting in front of an adjudicator or someone? Would you like to be able to say, well, while you're accusing us of not doing this properly, the record shows that you asked for 52 corrections in your time over the last 24 months. I mean, so I'm just, you can tell I get jazzed about HR software.
Absolutely.
Thanks for asking me that question.
You know what? You made a great point right now. And I have to tell you, for the life of me, I don't understand this forgetting to clock in. You worked for me for the last 17 years. Why do you still forget to clock in?
I know. It's frustrating. But nonetheless, everybody who's listening, it's happening everywhere. So you need a solution.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about HR software since you brought it up. So, time clocking. And yep. And by the way, you mentioned the software that comes free in our practice management software. Mm-hmm. I am not familiar with many of them, but the one that I use, and I don't want to, put any company on the blast, but this system is horrible. It's absolutely, it's the worst.
Well, let's go back to what they're focused on. They're focused on your patient management system.
Right.
And when they put that in, it was cutting edge. They put that in, I guess, probably 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, they've continued to upgrade everything except for that. And I don't blame them. And quite frankly, they would have to put literally millions of dollars into the system in order to give you something more than, we call it stupid clocking. And stupid clocking could put you at risk. And it could use a stupid amount of your time in order for you to administer it.
That's a great point. And I have to tell, we make third party software essentially. That's what it's, falls under the umbrella. And a question that people often ask me is, why does a practice management software doesn't do it? And the answer is, it's just too much for one software to do. Mm-hmm. A lot of things require a more specialized approach. And so you want something that is, and this is what you've done. You've developed your own system. Let's talk about that.
So I've created something which, this is cutting information here. It is eventually going to be known as HR Basecamp. It's now called the HR Vault. And it's a software that we've been investing in for over 10 years. I have over $1 million invested in this software. And what it does is it creates HR software systems that are built into it. So they're part of it. They're inherent with the software that we provide. And it also integrates with other software systems as well. But, just talking about what we provide. So if you log into our, what we call our members area in the HR Vault, you get the HR Vault. you distribute your handbook there. Employees sign it. You can keep track of who signed it, who hasn't. You can see how much time they spent reading it. You can distribute any document to them, whether they've signed it or not. You can tell if they viewed it. So it's keeping track of everything there. It's keeping track of all their information. So, you know, your filing cabinet with all, you know, what's their cell number? They're not here. Are they okay? Call them. It's all in one place. It's integrated with HIPAA training. So every single employee is HIPAA trained through the system online when they've got downtime. Never stop your office again. A year from now, when they need to take the HIPAA training again, you know, in accordance with the recommendations, system prompts them to do it. They can sit down, takes them 20 minutes, and they all get trained. We have it integrated with our help system so that if it's in the middle of the night and you know we're not here, we're working like you are, we're working during the day, but if you got a question in the middle of the night or over the weekend, you can submit your question to us and one of our experts are going to get back to you the following day. Or, you know, you know, it's also a place that tracks all of your conversations with us and your manager's conversations. The system is also, you know, pretty powerful in saving time. It's kind of keeping all, it's getting rid of that filing cabinet and keeping all of your HR stuff in one place. You can even give them corrective actions through it and have them sign those corrective actions. And then as we were talking about timekeeping, it's fully integrated with the timekeeping, so much so that an employee goes to their self-service portal. It's unique to them. They look in and they could tell you how many sick days they have left. And they can tell you how many vacation days they have left. And then they can request from you if they can have that time off. And you can quickly just look at everything that's in the system, look at the corrections. It's even got a countdown for overtime, Gina. I mean, it literally, we've just thought about what you guys needed and we put it in there and continue to put it in there. Notes on employee files that can be turned into tasks. So, you know, you don't remember when your hygienist renewal comes up a year from now. So you put a note with a task in it to remind you to check. Did you get it? Scan it in. Give it to me. I'll put it in your file so you can keep all that stuff there. So that's our HR software.
I absolutely love it. I have, well, first of all, you know, I geek out.
Of course you geek out. Yep, we're geeks. Yeah. Yep.
So,
Gina, not nerds, by the way. We are not nerds. We are geeks. There's
we're
a big
geeks,
difference.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just really excited about this. But just thinking about a day of a dentist, and, you know, I'm a little, because of the size of my practice, I have like middle management in place.
Of course.
But if you have a smaller practice, you know, you come to the office and you answer questions all day long. Can you adjust my time clock? How many vacation days do I have? Can we talk for a second?
Yep.
You know, it just nonstop. And it's so nice to be just able to say, look it up in an employee manual, in an employee handbook.
Yeah, you go look and tell me what happens if the July 4th falls on Thursday and whether or not we pay the Friday or not.
Exactly.
You go tell me, because it's in your handbook. If we've done your handbook and we've custom crafted it for you, and that's what we do. We custom craft every single employee handbook, and that takes time. So, if you know, doctors who are looking for a template and me to just hand them a book and not be involved in the process can't do business with us. We can't do business with them. And during that process, we have kind of a proprietary method for training everybody too. So not only are you asked, not only are we crafting everything to fit with the state and federal and local laws, but we're also training you on, you know, because a lot of times I'll share this with you, Gina. I get after the review, the doctor or the manager will send in some stuff and they'll say stuff like, well, you forgot to tell employees no gossiping and that they can't talk about their wages. And if you're not talking to us and you've just working on a templated handbook, you're not going to get the message back. The reason why that's not in there is because both of those things are highly illegal and that they are not allowed by law. They're actually not bad policies. They're actionable, illegal policies. So if the National Labor Relations Board has an attorney hand that to them on behalf of one of your ex-employees, you're in trouble. I mean, you're in $60,000 worth of defense and you're in trouble. So, you know, that's the thing. When we custom craft, it gives everybody an opportunity to just get better. It's a crash course. It usually takes about 2 hours. And doctors are like, no, I don't want to do anything for 2 hours. I'm not doing that. And, you know, they get on the phone and by the end of it, I think 99.9% of them are like, you know what? That was kind of awesome. I learned something.
Yeah.
You know, I really came out of this with something that I can use.
And I have to tell you, you're actually the person that I've learned this from a couple of years ago, that we're not supposed to prevent our employees from talking about their wages. And it comes up a lot. I mean, I see that question come up online quite a bit.
Yeah. There are other strategies. And again, you know, I get to extol the value of working with us. But, you know, working with us, Gina, is like working with 5,000 other dentists. I mean, that's the thing. You got to look at everybody we've worked with over all these years. We have more than 2,000 members who are members right now. So when you work with us, you get that advantage of all of that knowledge, all of those problems, all of that evolution. It is not the same world as it was in 2006. You get the benefit of that. So there are other ways to address that sort of conversation. You know, it's not something we can cover in a few seconds, but I mean, you come on with an advisor here, and we've got all kinds of strategies like, let's do talk about why you're being paid what you're paid. Here's an opportunity to really open up a can of worms for them and go, you know, the reason why Becky's being paid more than you is because I perceive that she's doing a better job than you're doing. If you'd like a raise, let's talk about where, you know, places you can improve upon. And again, we can make this a very constructive conversation to have with people. The other thing is if they're getting in this wage conversation, there's probably some other stuff going on that we can focus on.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah, it's not just that, it's something else.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's something else I wanted to ask you. And again, one of those things that comes up quite a bit is working interview.
Yes.
Can we do working interviews? Should we pay for them? Is it legal? How do we classify them? So many questions there.
Okay. So a working interview is not really a thing. So when a person comes to your business and walks through the front door and begins to do any of the work in your practice, for whatever reason, whether or not you think it could be for 5 minutes or 50 years, they are your employee. You could call them whatever you want, but they're your employee, and all of the liability that comes along with an employee is instantly your liability. So there's this misnomer that you could call it a working interview, have the person come in, and because you're going to pay them less than $600, that you can just write them a check or give them some cash or come to some agreement with them and send them on their way. That $600 misnomer, misunderstanding, is an IRS rule that has nothing to do with the proper classification of employees. It has to do with taxes. And if you pay someone who legitimately does $600 or less of work for you, do you have to issue and find them and give them a 1099? And I believe the answer is no. These people coming through your door are doing the work of your practice, and they don't qualify for that at all. So here's the biggest thing. I could go through all of the things that you're not doing right when you do a working interview with someone. Here's what doesn't happen. If you treat them as a working interview, an independent contractor who's in for just a few minutes or a few hours, they're not on your payroll. You haven't checked their I-9. You don't have their W-2. You don't have any of that stuff. Well, workman's comp only covers employees. It does not cover independent contractors or anything else. So what you've done is you've created this awful situation for yourself where you are obligated to do everything you were supposed to do as an employer because they're an employee, yet you have excluded them in such a way from your systems so that workman's comp could say, nope, they weren't an employee when that happened. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense, absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that I asked you about it, because I do see a lot of dentists talk about working interviews, and then they're like, do you pay them? Do you not pay them? And I feel like if they're working, you have to pay them, but if you pay them, they have to be on payroll, they have to be covered.
That's exactly right.
Under your workman's comp insurance. You know, they have to receive the employee handbook. I mean, the whole nine yards. So is there a way to do a skill test, you know, without getting into this working interview or employment situation?
Well, look, that's the first thing is what people are trying to do in some ways is short circuit And I don't blame them. They're trying to take a shortcut past a lot of work that could, that needs to be done. And when I say a lot of work, I mean, you know, really good, thorough interviewing, behavioral interviewing, you know, understanding those techniques so you can really find out about the person. Because quite frankly, it's their culture fit that's as important as anything, isn't it, Gina? It almost more important than their skills in a lot of ways. I can give someone better skills. I can't make them a better person. I can't do that. So, you know, they're trying to short circuit that. They're trying to get around doing a skills test. You know, an example of a skills test, which we learned this about 10 years ago, is a great idea. Doctor just brings, well, the team does. They bring a prospective dental assistant in. They show her the tray. They show her a tray. And they say, go in that operatory and make that tray look like this tray. And they give them two or three tries. And they don't even expect them to get it right. They're just assessing how close do they get. You know, there's a lot of things you can assess there. How do they take the pressure of being told, no, that's wrong, go in there and do it again? You can just learn a lot from that behavioral interaction. I think where doctors struggle is hygienists, because they want to see the work that the hygienist does. And I believe that that's something that you just need to forego. I mean, because they can only work on your teeth so many times. Right. You know, technically, if you even have them clean employees' teeth and you have a policy which says we clean your teeth for free, then you are putting them to work for your practice. And so technically, that's not even okay. So skill testing, role playing. Look, I'm not the wage and hour police. If you like someone and they're really close and you want to, you know, they're doing well in the skill test, you want them to answer a phone call coming in from a patient, you know, no big deal. But if you sit them down there for 15, 20 minutes, an hour or longer, you're really putting yourself at some kind of risk. So look, interview well, skill test, written, physical skill testing. You can get them in. You don't have to pay them if you keep them out of the purview of doing work that the practice does. Now, the last thing is, and this is super important, you can hire them. I mean, put them through all of that, and they pass all that, hire them. Bring them in, put them on payroll, have them sign the employee handbook, check their I-9, get their W-2, and if they don't work out an hour later, a day later, or a week later, let them go. And you're good. And this idea that they're all of a sudden going to be able to claim a bunch of unemployment against you is absolutely untrue. Unemployment, it works different from state to state, but unemployment works off previous quarters. And so it is the previous quarter employer of which they look to in order to make the claim, in order to draw the money off of. And so don't let this nefarious thing that I keep hearing about unemployment keep you from properly hiring someone and protecting yourself, you know, because you're afraid that it's too much trouble. I mean, seriously, a W-2 and an I-9, at least do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You made an excellent point. I didn't know about that. And I actually was going to ask you about probation period, but it's great to know. That's another thing. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, sure. It's a 90-day getting acquainted period. People want to be careful about the use of probationary. Language takes on new meaning in the context of HR because it's got laws that are associated with it. So it's a legal term of art when you say probation. That actually means something outside of what we all think it means. So it's a getting acquainted period. Most people use 90 days. The reason why we use the 90 days is because generally something occurs at the 90-day mark, which is they become eligible to start earning vacation time or whatever. I'm not going to go down that whole list. They may become eligible for health insurance if you have a health insurance, if you sponsor a plan. So it's okay to have a 90-day getting acquainted period, which just puts us all on notice that we're really still filling each other out. But it doesn't exist. It doesn't mean anything. It just doesn't. I will say to you that if you know someone's not a fit, the sooner you get them out, the better. That's always super important. Your liability gets greater the longer someone works for you. You know, the more damage they can do as they're not doing great. And so you would ask, Gina, well, why would I keep somebody too long? And it's because you busted your rear end doing everything I told you to do, and you spent, you know, 3 hours on this person, and you spent innumerable minutes and hours on other people. You finally chose them, and now you're realizing you didn't ask them one question you should have asked them, and you've got crazy pants on your hands. And you don't want to let them go because you've invested all this time and effort into them. So I get it. I mean, I get it.
And I think a lot of times doctors don't want to, you know, get back into it, and they don't have time, and they think maybe that person will, you know, come around. And the reality is they just, you know, kill the morale of the rest of the team. They ruin your culture. They're, you know, the minute you put a misfit into your cultural, everything just falls apart. Let's talk a little bit about corrective actions. And you and I actually debated a little bit about this on Dental Town, because, you know, you're an HR guy and I am, you know, the leader that I think that I am, whatever. But I mean, in my opinion, corrective action is something that you do to document what happened before you let them go.
Yep.
It doesn't really change the behavior, does it?
You know what? I'm gonna jump all the way past. I'm gonna jump to let them go. So, no. If you want, if you don't want to get sued by an employee, this is the secret. No surprises. So what I mean is that the employee knows that there's an issue. They've been made aware of it. They understand what the impact is, and they know what it is that they need to do in order to correct it. If you can get that into the employee's mind, that's about the only way you're going to get them to do something different. And I'll be honest with you. I think you know this, Gina. I mean, we take more than 10,000 calls every year from our members, little things and big things. And this is definitely one of those things in the middle. Nobody changes, but people can improve.
True.
And sometimes they're not aware of what it is that they're doing. And a lot of this conversations that we have with employees as you know, managers, is really about setting an expectation. What we're saying as HR people is that taking opportunities to document this stuff can only help you. It really can't hurt. Now, if you're an autocrat who believes that every single infraction should include a corrective action of which they must sign and acknowledge, I don't think that you're going to get your team on board and behind you, because really those things should come few and far between, but you shouldn't shy away from them. So look, it's almost as effective for you to teach your managers, this is the issue, this is the impact, this is the self-correction, these are the things we've talked about before. They can make notes about that in the employee's file. You know, they can document it that way. They can document conversations. We have email more now. So, you know, a strategy we often use when an employee is making a complaint is say, would you mind going off and being more specific about what your complaint is? So now we have a email that just came in. So we, you know, again, we're gathering documentation. We're setting that up. In the end, it's a good idea to issue corrective actions when it's appropriate. If someone's constantly late, if someone won't stay, you know, you've had the team meeting, you've had the individual meeting, and yet they always skip out at 4:15, which means everybody else is working till 5 to get their areas clean. With if that employee would stay, that team could have gotten out 15 minutes early, which saves you hours and overtime. You know, issue the corrective action. It's in these instances where your hands are tied if you don't have any documentation. So there's a balance to it, and it need not be so brutal all the time. You know, but it does. I mean, we struggle with it here. We have very high functioning, high performing people. At what time do you decide to go from having a conversation with them to having a conversation and sliding a piece of paper across the way? And I can tell you, when they've crossed the line, when it comes to maybe sexually harassing someone or someone lodging a complaint saying that person's being a little too forward, you're going to sign something about us having this conversation. And I could give you multiple examples where it is just what you should do. I don't know if that helps or not, because I can't give you a pat thing. and I want to be pragmatic too. I would go in the favor of issuing the corrective action and getting something in writing as opposed to not doing it. If for nothing else, you practice having a tough conversation with them. And we've got some really good methods for doing it. We've got something called the FER method, which is universally loved by everyone we ever share it with. And it's just this step process. And it kind of sets the other person up to be able to hear you. You know, to be able to hear what you have to say and to contribute to their own their own solution.
And for me, it's always, when first of all, I find that, dentists in general, we don't have time to give feedback. We shy away from giving feedback. And so when we need to sit down and have this difficult conversation, it's gut-wrenching and we don't want to do it and we almost, or it's all of a sudden a surprise. Like, what do you mean I haven't been doing well? I thought everything was great because you never said anything.
Because you never said anything, yeah.
And so I think that continuous ongoing feedback, not just negative, but also positive feedback, that's where, that's where it's at. And then... And at some point, if you need to sit down and have a conversation, I kind of feel at that point, like if I feel like we need to sit down and have a really serious conversation, I just want to let them go. But what you're saying is document first.
Hold up a second and let me document. And particularly because, look, in so many cases, there are going to be other mitigating factors surrounding that letting them go. And if the mitigating factors aren't there, they injured themselves on the job sometime in the last 3 months and made a workman's comp claim. They've used their mandatory paid sick leave. In the state of Arizona, if you've used your mandatory paid sick leave day within 3 months, it is presumed that if you get fired, it is in retaliation for using that day. Therefore, you must be able to prove as the employer that the reason why you fired them is the reason why you fired them, not because they used a sick day. So there are often, I can give you many other mitigating factors that can be in there, which say we really have to be sure that we can show at least some documentation that we are firing for the reason we're firing. Because, everybody says, well, I'm an at-will employer. I can fire for any reason. I don't have to give them a reason at all. How many people listening to this podcast just walked in one day and because you could fire someone, picked them and said, you know what, Bill, today's your day. You've been a great employee, but because I can let you go, I'm firing you. I mean, no one fires anyone for no reason. And so when you document note-taking, them not clocking properly is a form of documentation. A write-up, if that's what you need to do, improvement plans, be careful with those, but you can use those as well. You are documenting the real reason why you let someone go, and you're taking away their ability to make the reason up for you. And that's the other thing. So feedback loop, very, very important, should be ongoing. Documenting equally as important because lawyers.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm good. Since you mentioned lawyers, I'm going to ask you a question that I saw someone ask on Facebook. And then, so I listened to this podcast. It's called Working Interferences. It's a comedy podcast with Joshua Austin and Lenz Timmerman. You might remember Lenz from Dental Town from years back. So it's a comedy podcast, and what they do is they pick questions that they see on Facebook groups or other social media, and they kind of pick them apart, and they, come up with bad advice.
Bad guidance. I love it.
Yeah. It's hilarious. I can't stop plugging this podcast because it literally makes my life better. But I'm going to ask you this question because I actually want to have a real answer to that question.
Okay.
So this dentist hired a dental assistant who wasn't really that great, but I guess she kept forgetting to clock in, catches her all the time on her cell phone, looking for her, and she's just like chilling somewhere on a couch. So after 6 weeks, she comes up to her, and this assistant is literally sitting on a couch on her phone, and she tells her, you can't do that. You can't be on your phone. You have to be at work. And the assistant responds, well, there's nothing you can do. I just found out I'm pregnant, so there.
Wow.
And I don't know which state this is in, but let's do it for California. Let's do it for Texas. What's the answer there?
Okay, so you can regulate what employees do when they are supposed to be on duty and working, but you have to be very careful, and let's use cell phones as an example. The National Labor Relations Board a few years ago put out an opinion that said that cell phones are a form of communication between employees in the modern age. And therefore, employers need to be careful about how they regulate the use of cell phones at work, because it could prevent them from discussing their benefits, wages, or working conditions.
Interesting.
So think, you know, how much we make, how much they make, their working conditions, safety issues, all those things they have to be able to discuss freely at any given time. That said, we did get some additional guidance, and it is okay to regulate the use of cell phones while they're on the clock and in certain areas. What is problematic is to say, you know, we have a sock. Everybody comes in the morning, you throw your phone in the sock. The problem with that is that when an employee goes to the sock to get the phone, they feel like they're not supposed to be doing that. The fact is that most practices allow employees to take breaks. In some states, they're mandatory. That time is still paid, by the way. It's still work time when they take those 10-minute, 15-minute breaks. So when you have a policy that says you can't have your phones at work, that violates. So you have to have that. Remember, I told you, words take on new meaning in legal context. So you have to tell them, you have to talk about when they can and can't be on them, and under what conditions. You can't be on it in front of a patient. You can't be on your phone if you're in the waiting room. That, you know, because a patient could walk in and see it. You can't be on your phone in the clinical area. You can't be on your phone at your desk, which implies it's okay if you're on break. And you can say in the break room, in the bathroom, you know, wherever, you can be on your phone. So if you have a policy in place and they are breaking that policy, Gina, what would I recommend that you do? I would recommend that you write them up. So now we have 6 write-ups about the phone. I'm going to be a little ridiculous. Let's say we have 2. We also have 7 notes in the file. Caught her on her phone again, talked to her about it. She said she would stop doing it. We also have that she comes in late often. So we have it on the time clock. We have 2 emails from patients which say, what the hell is up with that dental assistant, and why was she doing what she was doing when I was in the chair, and I don't want to talk about cats or, you know, whatever she was doing. We hopefully have a couple of records of us talking to her about her talking about her cats to patients. And again, I'm picking the thing that would get on my nerves. And by the way, everybody, I love cats. Just
no hate mail. Don't send full hate mail.
Yeah, exactly. Don't send me hate mail. I love cats. I just don't like them on me. Or in my dental, you know, when I'm getting my teeth cleaned. So we have all of these things, right? Now we have an employee. And by the way, oh, I love this. You've given me the greatest scenario. And guess what? The doctor's super busy. And like you said, she's okay. She's not the worst person he's had. He spent a lot of time hiring her. And he's thinking about getting rid of her, and now she pops up and says, guess what, I'm preggers, right?
Yeah.
So let's be clear about that situation. I don't care if you're pregnant or not. You're on your phone when you're not supposed to be on your phone. I have a policy. You've acknowledged it. I'm going to write you up for it, all right? I might not fire you because you're pregnant at the time. But if you do ever want to take any kind of affirmative action, writing up a pregnant employee or doing any of those things, it's the only way to protect yourself. You've got to document these things, because the final straw is this employee needs to go, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, you've lost 3 patients over them. So they're not just writing emails. They're telling you, I'm not coming back. I'm not bringing my kids. You know, that person's just horrible. Would you rather have all the documentation and the policies and everything in place? Hopefully some good experts that can help you, you know, document the stuff and then let her go. There's another thing here. The Pregnancy Discrimination Act covers employers with 15 or more employees. Many of the other laws that protect employees who are pregnant are up in that area, 15 and all the way up to 50. So in some instances, in some states, she may have no protections because of the number of employees that you have. But I need you to be very careful with that, everybody, because she very well could. Your state could have lowered the threshold down to 2 or 1, and she's got some protection. But is an employee protected because they're pregnant? No. Not from following procedure. I mean, that would be like her saying, well, I don't have to do my job because I'm pregnant. And again, now I get into job descriptions and the importance of those, but we don't have to go down that trail.
This was a very informative discussion. You, I knew you were going to deliver a ton of value, and you sure did.
Thanks,
so
Gina.
Thank you so much. Now, if anyone wants to, and by the way, I wanted to mention something. You were talking about your HIPAA training program, and I wanted to tell you that we use it. We use it in my dental practice. We use it at Yappy because, you know, we're a dental software company.
Yeah.
And it's excellent. It's so easy to use, and I just love it. And it's very, very well priced. So if anyone is interested, definitely check it out. We're going to put some contact information in the show notes, but please tell us how they can find you or your company.
Yeah, so you know, you can always search for us on the internet. You can find us at cedarsolutions.com or just type it into Google and Google will find us. If you've got a question about something that we talked about here, or you know, you want to know about a handbook and what we charge and how that whole thing works, the software, you can get the software without anything else, any of that stuff. Dr. Dorfman, I'm actually going to give them my email address. So you can reach me at Paul, P-A-U-L, at Cedar, C-E-D-R, solutions with an S.com. You can always call in at 602-476-1418. You could ask for me. Good luck with that. if you want to really talk to me, I would send an email to me. But if you just want to know about our services, you just call and ask. I've got an amazing team who have a great culture, and they'll take very, very good care of you. But I'm always happy to answer personal questions or clarify if I've said something on here that has caused you some heartache or some confusion.
Thank you so much. I think you've been really, really clear. Thank you for the invitation to, for our listeners to reach out to you personally.
Gina, thank you. I love what I do. I hope it comes across, and I appreciate the opportunity to tell people what we do and kind of talk through some of these things. Thank you very, very much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Paul. Bye.
Okay, have a great day.
You too.